implemented to take jobs or minimize the job losses and ameliorate the impact of affected workers or the employees. And also the stakeholder declaration on the identified interventions was supported by all and concluded on the 31st of August last year. Effectively, the declaration has been in application for 6 months since the end of August last year. The interventions that have been agreed upon, firstly, we've agreed with the stakeholders that we must put measures to delay the implementation of the retrenchment, and we'll come to that. Secondly, we must enhance productivity and manage cost pressure. And thirdly, there should be accelerated concurrent rehabilitation activities to create alternative jobs for the mine workers. And also, there should be the facilitation of the sale of distress and other mining assets. And we should also consider other alternatives to avoid job losses. We should support, there should be support for mine workers in the event that the job losses could not be avoided. And there should be the utilization of the multinational company procurement levy to also support employment opportunities for retrenched mine workers. And also there should be the streamlining of the processes for downscaling and updating of the database and exploring fiscal instruments. And last but one, there should be investment promotion and market development. And lastly, the issue of communication is what so that it's very important that we must sort of think from the same inbook as the stakeholders. In terms of the highlights of the savings, the progress in saving jobs, the first one regarding the delay of the implementation of the retrenchment. Through working together with all the stakeholders and the DTMA, this has resulted in about 16,000 affected jobs to be held in abeyance. In other words, you know, about 16,000 jobs, if probably this process was not in place, could have been severely affected at that time. But through this process, we managed to work together with the CCMA and the stakeholders to say, let's look at other alternatives. And currently, there is that process that has been taken place. So in other words, there's not been yet the retrenchment from that 16,000 that we've referred to since the end of August last year. And also in terms of accelerated concurrent rehabilitation activities to create alternative jobs for mine workers, there is a development of the plan for the utilization of the rehabilitation funds for the concurrent rehabilitation, which is at an advanced stage. We have been encouraging the mines to say, let's just find ways of making sure that we put effort on rehabilitation, and this will also assist us in job creation, and you know, we can absorb some of the workers who will be highly affected by the possible retrenchment. And in terms of the facilitation of the sale of the distressed mining assets, it has been publicly indicated through the media that some of the multinational corporate, the major multinational corporations have been embarking on restructuring processes and unbundling of some of their assets. And we believe that this also creates a new era for emergence of new and transformed mining companies to drive the national developmental imperative. To this extent, we are working together with other stakeholders in championing the development of the framework to enable a seamless transition to mitigate the impact of retrenchment as well as the economy. So we are working on a framework to agree to say how should we effect this effect, how more efficient and effectively. And further highlights in terms of the support of mine workers, the Department of Labor Retrenchment Response Team is being reactivated. Honourable members, as you can still recall, during the gold crisis, the gold crisis in the 90s, there was this retrenchment response team that helped significantly the workers who have been affected in the gold sector by the retrenchment. So they were looking at issues like the services that were going to be rendered there, including the issues of their UIF benefits, financial planning, advice, training and reskilling when necessary, including the possible skills as well, and also maintaining a database of the workers who have been affected, as well as doing counseling for those workers who have been affected by this. So we are working together with, I think for the first time really in the last almost 20 years that this has been re-established. So we are working together with the Department of Labor to establish that. And last thing that on that slide as well, in terms of the utilization of the multinational companies procurement levy, we are also looking at the reviewing the mining charter to detect this particular intervention. And the charter will be released before the end of by the end of 2016 for public comment. And further highlights, in terms of streamlining of the processes, we are now working together with the Department of Labor and the CCMA to align the business processes. Because what some of the mining companies will do will go straight to CCMA in terms of Section 189 without considering the Section 92 of the NPRPA. So together with the Department of Labor and the CCMA, we've been working together, making sure that there is proper alignment in this particular regard. And in terms of promotion of investment and market development, there's a task team that has been established of the platinum group metals to consider appropriate interventions and to ensure sustainability of the industry. And there's engagement with the manganese industry to develop a Marshall Plan for the sector to ensure sustainability as well. Because the manganese sector has been significantly affected as a result of the current global economic conditions. And last on the slide, the Safe Diamond Trader also leads the process or initiative to advance local beneficiation of diamonds. Last year, the SDT held a diamond in Daba. This was also informed by a study that they have done to determine what has led to the challenges in terms of diamond beneficiation. And that study made some recommendations on what should the diamond sector do to improve on that. Now, they were in the process of coming with an action plan to effect those recommendations. And this year, there will be a follow-up in Daba, the diamond in Daba, just to check the progress that has been made in that particular regard. And other interventions, honorable members, that we have embarked upon in collaboration with other stakeholders and also to sustain the industry. It includes the bilateral engagement that we have with the respective mines and also with involving the unions. And this has resulted in about 3,900 direct jobs to be saved in the gold sector last year. And also about a further 3,031 in the coal sector. Some of these mines, honourable members, they were put under liquidation. They were in the process of being put under liquidation. Some of the mines have been in the process of being put under care and maintenance. But through our engagement with those particular mines, one of the mines, and it's a big coal mine as well, they were in the process of either putting the mine under care and maintenance or looking for a buyer for that particular mine. But through working together with the unions and that mine, about 3,100 jobs were saved. The department is also leading interventions in collaboration with key stakeholders to secure medium to long-term sustainability of the mining industry. These include the implementation of the Mineral Beneficiation Action Plan in terms of the 9-point plan. For example, the expansion of the platinum group metals beneficiation industry to grow the demand through new product development and application. And some of the examples is the fuel cell electrification plant, which have been launched in line with the hydrogen strategy of the Department of Science and Technology, supported by the Department of Trade and Industry and ourselves in the department. And this initiative, it will benefit, it in fact is currently benefiting the rural community and also other industrial applications. And secondly, there is an accelerated implementation of the Memorandum of Understanding with the Russian Federation on platinum group metals that seeks to jointly invest in R&D with all research and development with platinum industry in finding new applications for metals. We are working together with the Russian Federation in terms of the geological aspects of this and also the other technologies and beneficiation aspects that we can work together on. And lastly, there on the slide, we as a department, we continue to lead the investment promotion of South Africa's mining industry as a favorable destination, protective of the sanctity of investment as corroborated by constant annual World Economic Forum ratings. Honorable members, early last month, there was the mining endeavor, which the minister has also addressed, and it's, although there's been fewer numbers this year, but it is well attended also this year. And we continue to also engage in other forums, including in Australia, including in Canada. There'll be TDEC, which is coming, and we'll be going there to encourage investment into Africa. So those are the initiatives that we constantly, you know, embark upon to attract investment into the sector. In terms of conclusion, as a department, through the collaboration with the critical stakeholders, it's very important that we continue working together with the stakeholders to play an active role to save the jobs in the mining sector. And the Federation and other initiatives that I've referred to for saving jobs have yielded some positive results. However, we do acknowledge that there's still a greater effort which is still required from all the stakeholders to deal with the scourge of job losses. And lastly, honorable members, the department will also continue to implement interventions that are taking to account sustainable growth. For us, it's very important. The minister has also indicated that in the period of past, we must consider what measures can be put in place to prepare for the boom period. And some of the things that we've been working on, including on the competitiveness and transformation of the mining industry. Honorable Chairperson, we thank you. And our members, thank you.
Any questions or clarities on Honorable Matlala, Honorable Lorema? I like to say that Honorable Matlala is sitting next to Honorable Lorema. Honorable Smith, was your hand up, Honorable Mandela? Host Mandela? Okay. Shoot.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm told you are the DDG, Mr. Caesar. Thank you very much. And the report about no, that's it. Oh, you have been appointed. Yeah. And our Honorable Minister, one of my questions, Chair, it wants a clarity, because Mr. Msisa was speaking about the industry, the mining industry. I'm not sure, Chair, whether Msisa would be able to say these are mines that are in the ICU. Can you tell us, Msisa, about which ones carrying the ICU, which needs the department's attention. I don't know whether you might have that answer. If you don't have, Mr. Mzifa, please don't manufacture the answer. The next meeting, they will be able to tell us which was the attention of the department. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Mr. Mzifa, for the presentation. The first thing that strikes me about this is that the entire blame for the decline of the mining industry seems to be ascribed to international trading conditions. I didn't see anywhere, maybe I've missed it, any discussion of the massive cost increases in the South African mining industry. And by costs, I don't just mean direct costs. I mean costs that arise out of poor regulation or poorly applied regulation. Think about electricity. There's been a problem with availability. As soon as you don't have electricity, your costs go up, if you're a mine. Physical cost of electricity, the monthly cost of electricity has gone up dramatically. There's a dramatically increased labor cost, too. And I'm not just talking about the rise in wages, much of which was justified because they were extremely low, but also the inefficiencies in the labor system. The fact that you can have months of strikes which are extremely violent and uncontrolled, which points to inefficiencies in the labor relations regime. And then there's the intrusive regulation. I was quite shocked the other day to see how many Section 54 stoppages there have been in the platinum industry in the last few months. And this is an industry where 80% of the mines are losing money. Now, nobody is going to disagree that where there's a safety violation, there should be appropriate action taken. The question is the action always appropriate? And is the action always warranted? And I think it's quite clear to me that it's not. And if you tell me in every case it is, I simply won't believe you. Next, we go on to this initiative that we're discussing today. It's a laudable initiative. I think there's some creative solutions being utilized here. But the problem is that they missed the point. And the point is that until we have a game changer in terms of the rules under which mining is conducted, all we'll be doing is rearranging the deck chairs on a Titanic. We'll make things better, but we won't stop the sliding shots. We need a fundamental change in our mining policy, and I'm not seeing that, despite the fact that we're told that over 30,000 jobs that are at risk, you say that you've saved for the time being anyway half of them, and UM is talking about 100,000 jobs at risk, which incidentally I'd like to comment on, that 100,000. But until we give investors some reason to put their money here, they will keep going. And they will keep going like Anglo-American, which is exiting the South African coal industry. And who can be surprised at that when you look what they're facing? New Largo Colliery, which is supposed to supply Kusile. They're told that they can't supply Kusile unless they're 51% PE owned. Now, here we see the consequences of, and this is not even mining policy, this is just a state policy that says BE ownership is much more important than production and more important than keeping the lights on. So we see them exit, and that's fine because there's lots of coal there and there's lots of people who want to get involved in coal mining, except that the people who want to get involved in coal mining don't have the capital necessary to develop that mine. And this is going to be the story down the line. Fine, you can say all these multinationals are going, but then where is the money to replace the money that they are taking? And until we get this fundamental change in the mining industry that I'm talking about, and I've offered before three suggestions for how you can do this. You can rewrite the NPRDA so it is really investor friendly. Now, we keep being told how investor friendly it is. Investors don't seem to agree. You could say that when you rewrite the mining charter, you would undertake not to raise the levels of EEE ownership. They're already 26%. There are rumors that they're going to go up as high as 51%. That's going to kill investment. And then you could also accept once empowered, always empowered. Here are three easy steps that, Minister, you could take tomorrow, and it would cause a sea change in sentiment in the mining industry. But we haven't heard that. We're just seeing tinkering around the edges, which, as I say, is very nicely done, but it misses the point. Thank you.
Honourable Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to add to what Mr. Lorimer said in the following. You know, I read an economic article, and I'm not an economist by any means, which says that in light of the fact that the demand for metals has abated, the role of developing countries in the international economic setup is going to dwindle in favor of the developed countries. So what you're seeing is the current economic, call it the mineral international market, is in favor of developed economies, not in developing countries like South Africa. So therefore, what Mr. Lorimer has said is so much more important if you want to ensure that we remain somewhat relevant and that we're in a position to keep on growing our economy, because we have a 7 or 8% contribution to the GDP. But having said that, there are a few issues which I'd like to raise with regards to your presentation. The first is, on page 6, you do have figures for 2015. I see that you have mineral price since 2015, but you don't have the 2015 figures for the employment trend in mining on page 5. I've heard those figures are, if my memory is correct, 480,000, and it's since 2013 to 2015, end of 2015, first quarter to 2016, it's about 40,000 jobs lost, if I recall correctly. So if 2015 were to be added to the graph on page 5, that downward cycle is even more, continues further downward, in other words, what I'm saying is, to 480,000, it's just to confirm that. Then the issue which, if you look at page 7, it struck me this morning that if you look at the agriculture and the mining sector, the electricity, I believe, is a consequence of agricultural and mining decline. That's my belief, because less electricity required, the electricity sector will dwindle. But agriculture and mining, and I'm not sure what to do with it, but we have a mining sector regulated by the NPRDA. We have the agricultural sector where there's a land reform and development bill coming up. And both those sectors have far-reaching, mining had far-reaching consequences and far-reaching changes. Agriculture seems to be the next sector, economic sector, where there's far-reaching changes to be implemented. So I'm just marking it as a marker. I don't know what to do with it, but it just gives an indication. It is coincidence, it could be the consequence, but those are the issues which I'd like to raise. As two sectors where there's a negative growth due to far-reaching changes to the domestic regulatory and statutory consequences of legislation, if you follow what I'm saying. Then on page 10, could you just expound on utilization of the multinational company's procurement levy? I'm not quite sure what that is. I don't get to work with it quite often. Could you just indicate to us what the role of that particular procurement levy is? It is in page 11, you speak about the rehabilitation funds for concurrent rehabilitation. Highfield Steel is, for instance, one instance where it's closing down. And there was a report recently, I think it's on a Monday, saying that environmental concerns were inter alia responsible for, or jointly responsible for, the closing down of Highfield Steel because of the massive rehabilitation liabilities attached to Highfield Steel. Now, I'm not saying one should not look at environmental consequences and one should not, but it seems to me that in the light of the current economic situation, there is a increasing awareness that concurrent rehabilitation needs to be done and not left to after the mine is closed and then start rehabilitation. Is this, do I read it correctly in that regard? Because it seems to you, you seem to say, well, accelerate this concurrent rehabilitation activities. Now, why would you accelerate concurrent rehabilitation activities? You say to create alternative jobs for mine workers. Is it seen with a closure, or is the possible closure under care and maintenance, or possible sale, or closure of mines a consideration in, the, in this regard? And I'm referring to page 10, Roman 2. And then on page 12, I would go so far as to say that if the mining charter is to look anything like a 51% ownership pattern, under the current situation would have, with due respect, dire consequences. So I'm not sure what's coming. Maybe the minister would like to indicate to us what's possibly coming. But it's a dangerous call at this point in time, under these circumstances, to increase anything with regards to the mining charter as it exists at the moment, the 2014 objectives. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ambulele, I'd like to thank the minister and Obamusiza with the entire delegation at DMR for their presentation on job losses, which is a concern to all of us, particularly in the sector, as it is one of the biggest contributors to our economy. But if I may just talk to slide 6 for a moment. His Excellency President Zuma in his State of the Nation address alluded to the low prices of commodities, and it is then reflected out there on page 6, the trends on prices in iron ore, coal, as well as platinum. I'd like to know, Chairperson, what has the impact been on these low prices in terms of job losses? So if you look at iron ore, for example, the price has fallen by 21%. What has that contributed to in terms of numbers when we look at jobs? Have mining companies in that sector in particular looked at the retrenchments as a means of saving and cutting costs, if you can talk to that. But I'd like to also gain an understanding, Honorable Chair, in terms of each and every commodity there or sector, whether it be iron ore, coal or platinum, gold, how are the mining houses or mining entities doing in terms of jobs and securing jobs and ensuring that we are able to stabilize the economy in that regard. Honorable Chair, then there is on page 9, the declaration that was signed by the mining houses, of which His Excellency President Zuma, and also in his State of the Nation address, talked to this. And he said that it seemed that retrenchments were the first thing that mining houses thought of when they met challenges. What is DMR doing to ensure that mining houses are held accountable, particularly as the signatories of this declaration? I know at the time it was signed, Honorable Minister, the former minister Ramaphosa said there were an estimate of about 19,000 jobs that were under threat at the time. Is that the case? I can see my colleague Honorable Lerima is already shooting that number to be sitting at 100,000, and I'm not sure what the real numbers are, so I'd like to gain clarity. What are we talking about in that regard? If you can give us insight in the issue of the numbers we are encountering out there. Thank you.
Now let me thank the honorable members for raising some questions and thank those who have appreciated, of course, their presentation. It gives us hope. There are a number of companies, of course, that from time to time get to a point of ICU, as you put it, Honorable Matlala. You may name Kumba, which is one of the companies that are largely talked about. You know, at some point, Optimum Coal was put in business rescue. Zululand Anthracite also was going the same way. We have been able to intervene and deal with some of those companies. Anglo has also indicated that they will be leaving some assets in other commodities, remaining with basically seven assets in South Africa, mainly in platinum, copper and diamonds. Honorable Lorima is correct. It was not our intention to be as detailed as he wants us to be, because then we would have had a very big presentation. Cost is surely one of the contributors of job losses, as you have indicated. We have done relatively well in stabilizing the issue of inefficiencies, as you put it, strikes, to be direct. The year 2015 was relatively stable. We're dealing with that stability to ensure that we move forward. I'm sure you'll have a number of negotiations that may get to a point of us trying to mitigate that factor going forward, because we're approaching a year of negotiations. So we may not rule out completely the issues of strike moving forward because of that reason. Section 54 is an important tool of mine health and safety. In fact, since our appointment in this sector, we have met a number of, in fact, almost all the CEOs in the sector, the mining chamber, junior miners, we have met almost everybody. They all agree that the Mine and Health Safety Act, that includes Section 54, has changed the course of South Africa when it comes to safety and health issues. If we had time, we would have presented to you, honorable members, as to how do we compare with countries like USA, Canada and Australia if we get to the issues of health and safety. We are there. We compete favorably with them. The notion of Section 54 at some point is being used inappropriately. We may want to entertain it. I have said when I met with all the stakeholders, without fail, should you have any doubt or any indication that in a particular instance, Section 54 was used inappropriately, our doors are open. That's what I've said to them. This is what I'm saying also to the portfolio committee. I have not received any complaint. In fact, in Lily Mine, where we are facing this problem, under the circumstances we are facing, the CEO is saying, your guys have helped us moving forward. So I would want to urge honorable members to try and be a collective once we have agreed, unless there is other issues that could be raised directly, and we'll attend to those issues immediately. Because our view is that that section of mine health and safety has personnel that is highly trained. That's what the CEOs of the mine are telling us, and we believe it because of the stats we have in front of us. The game changer, as you are alluding to it, I think the point here that is at issue is how do we deal with transformation? Me and you must be able to be in unison. In South Africa, transformation must happen and will happen. That is not a question. And we must also agree that at some point, the previously disadvantaged must get to a point where they are not treated only as BEE, but they should be helped to get to a stage where they play favorably compared to our multinationals. If we are not going to create that scenario here, nobody will create it. So the issue of 26% and the MPRDA holistically should not be the issue that will scare people. We have gone out on record and said we are not going to be reckless about transformation. We are not going to reap investors. We understand that if anybody comes to South Africa and invests their money, they are expecting returns. They are expecting policy certainty, and that is what we want to provide to our investors. Let's allude to the fact that indeed at the stage where we are, most of the South African players in terms of mining will not be able to stand alone and take the industry forward. It's given. We will need multinational to stay with us. We will need to look after them, and we are prepared to do that. So but we must also indicate that companies are not leaving because of MPRDA and these other issues. It is an open secret that Anglo is leaving. It's actually better in South Africa because Anglo American has de-invested in Australia completely. It has de-invested in Brazil completely. In South Africa, it remains. But what is the status of Anglo? The truth is that they are not leaving because of policy uncertainty or legislation. I met with the CEO. They have a problem financially. It is a well-documented factor, and that should not be attributed to any other matter in government. In fact, they are saying the CEO himself, South Africa has been kind to them. That's what they say. He says to me, I have de-invested in my country of origin, Australia. But we continue in South Africa because we think our future lies here. That's what he says. So, but we look, the ones empowered and always empowered is an elephant in the room for now. I know Honorable Lorimout Maud really want to push us very hard to say something on it. He asked the question when we were here last time. He's asking the question now, and the answer is still the same. That matter is sub judice. We are dealing with the matter to resolve it as stakeholders, and our view is that we should resolve the matter out of court. That's our stance. We are engaging on that matter, and I believe we will be able to resolve the matter amicably moving forward. We are not going to come with a wholesale change in the MPRDA. The point about the MPRDA is that it is with Parliament. In fact, Parliament took it to President, and there were only four issues that were raised, and those issues are well documented. Issue of parity pricing, this issue that you are raising of the certainty around 50% plus, which the stakeholders have said to us, we do not have a problem with 50%, but we have a problem with how the narratives around plus, what is this plus? And we agree with them that let's bring certainty around that matter. That is why I'm saying that we are responsible. And the two other issues were procedural issues in terms of consultation and so forth. We are following those issues. We are not aiming to bring any other hostility issues because we are well aware about the importance of investors in South Africa. Declaration which was signed, we have done a lot in Nkosi Mandela. Companies have, the stakeholders have fairly cooperated with us. When the declaration was signed around 16,000 jobs were at stake when it was signed. And in those 16,000 jobs that were at stake, if we sketch the scenario before the signing of the declaration, they would have been all lost. But because of these 10 points, of delaying implementation, engaging, taking, transferring workers from this mine to the other mine and so forth, we can report that those jobs have not been lost up to so far. That excludes what we have tabulated here. That excludes the optimum coal jobs, 3,000 jobs that have been saved. Jobs will be lost in South Africa. And it's not only in South Africa. If you compare us with other countries, you'll find that we are better off in terms of managing the job losses. In fact, we were raising, and I'm sure we will be able to be in unison, if you go to page 6 of the presentation, can you go to page 6? We were saying, if you look at the year 2008 and you look at the iron ore, you'll find that if you compare 2008 and 2015, according to your graph, there is improvement. 2008, 2015, there is a slight improvement in terms of iron. It's a fact if you check on it. But what has happened is that in 2009, there was a boom. Iron ore started shooting up, and relatively other commodities. And what were the reasons that, that were there at that particular time? Mainly the issue of certainty, MPRDA, and the focal point of other countries like China, which at that particular time, their focal point was to develop infrastructure. And so the demand was there. But is it correct for us to continue measuring ourselves in terms of the time of boom? The reality will tell you that if there was not that focal point, we wouldn't be saying we are in the past. We would be saying we are relatively doing well, because we are moving up. If you compare your graph, it will tell you that we have not gone below 2008. If you take out that boom, and it is a well-documented point that China has since changed its focal point to consumption. What are we doing about that as South Africans? Because in a way, we must mitigate factors of ensuring that we do not largely depend on what other countries are doing, in the developing countries. We have introduced fuel cell to try and create demand here at home so that we ourselves can control issues like this. So I thought I should paint that scenario that we are hard at work. CCMA, as we're pronouncing the step on fatalities January this year, their steps were at around 32,000 jobs that are being threatened to be lost. But I must indicate that threat is not a stable target. It's a moving target. So we can't be hard and fast and say this is happening. If we didn't intervene, for an example, in Zululand anthracite, we would have lost around 3,030 jobs. We went there, we intervened, and we saved those. If we didn't intervene, of course, in the issue of optimum, we'd have lost 3,000 jobs. If we didn't intervene in the gold sector, Roland Corp, we'd have lost about 4,000 jobs that we went and saved, because we interact openly. We can be able to say, no, we have this plan. Can we go according to the plan? And one critical aspect that I must actually highlight by way of conclusion is that we're doing very well, Chair, on the aspect of encouraging companies not to sterilize the asset. We'd have lost a number of jobs. Once we put them in care and maintenance, we're losing jobs. And you can see by means of example to Zululand anthracite, it was going the same way. We said, no, can't we get a new player? Because most of our junior miners that are currently in the space were created during Zero's life. As we unbundle these assets, we may be able to come up with what Honorable Lorima is saying is a game changer. We will work with you to ensure that we achieve a game changer. We will differ with you where we believe that we are not doing enough to take the industry forward. But we have heard your criticism. We'll go back and discuss them, but let's work together. Thank you.
Okay. Before I come to you, Honorable Lorena, I'm not channeling anyone. But let me just make this point that primarily, I think as a committee, the interest was I think it's a tricky situation. There is an agreement by stakeholders in the industry. I always say, let's deal with the facts. The fact is, there is an agreement by stakeholders in the industry. Now, the question will arise, do we want as a committee to interrogate this agreement and look at it on its relevance? Secondly, obviously part of the task of the committee for accountability purposes is to also check is the progress that is being made, is it achieving the desired results? Well, one will argue and say it's still too early to measure, but there is an agreement. Thirdly, in this discussion that we want to have with yourself, I think as a committee must answer a question. Do we want to sponsor advices on the agreement, on how do we think it could work, so that we deal with that issue and dispose of it? But before we do that, that's why I said I don't want to turn it people. I don't want us to pretend as if there's no agreement in front of us. And the task, obviously, of the department is to monitor, but also to drive the implementation and compliance with the agreement, which one will assume that parties would have voluntarily subjected themselves to that agreement. I can't get a sense of. My only worry is that when I look at this agreement, there is only one party that is not signed in the declaration, which I would have had an interest. Now, to what extent is that binding? I just need clarity on that question so that tomorrow we don't go out here with an assumed interpretation of the non-signatory. If you are a non-signatory, what does that suggest? And to what extent is this declaration enforceable in terms of compliance? I want Mr. Honorable Lorima, before I go, because I can sense also in my career, you know, I'm always upfront. Before we have because one of the things that I always say, I play a second. I always want, because there's one thing that I always say, it irritates me. When I make a comment or a statement, then somebody distorts the statement so that he can be able to put his or her own argument to undermine or underscore what the statement is made. It's not something that I appreciate. I don't appreciate doing it to somebody else. So I wouldn't want to go out here having completely misunderstood you before I make my comment and therefore take advantage of making my own observation of the statement. I just want this way, because I can't go, it's not like it's there. In that place of votes of no confidence, I don't understand where we can have hindsight, then look at hindsight. I want to just have clarity on this issue
because to me I think it's a very sensitive area, so that I don't distort what you were saying in order for me to make an advantage statement. This question 54, because it seems to me there is something that you want to challenge on the section 54 application, that even if someone were to come with an argument that convinces you that we did what we're supposed to do by the law, you could still challenge that, that that is not how it is happening. So that if I make my comment on that one, at least I understand you very well, because that is the issue. I think it's fair to me before I make a comment on that part of section 54. Whether it applies wrongly or so, but I just want to get words. There was some words that accompanied that even if you answer me on this matter, I would, let me say again, I may not be quoting you correctly. I will still dispute that or challenge that or something like that, or don't want to believe that. I think the other issues, let's park them aside, because there are economic ideological differences that we all have. Even if I go further to what the minister was putting, it's a subject of us here. Because to me, the debate about the movement of investors, it might sound, that's why I'm saying it may be the discussion in the final conclusion of this, as we say, what should we do as a committee as a way forward? Maybe we must be able to open that space, whether it's going to achieve anything or just going to be another exercise of ideological gymnastics, because we'll be in different poles on how we approach issues. That's another thing for another day. But it seems to me, if we do have a justifiable, we must then be able to put evidence. Because if we're suggesting that the crisis that is facing the mining industry is only confined into a particular environment, then I think we must agree to have the potential of completely disagreeing. So I don't think it would be a correct assumption. And whether on the basis of that, issues of investment will be repelled. But also, what is it with the crisis now on what we have? Can we justify what is existing and say it must remain if it's creating a crisis? Because if we are going to assume that in raising the bar will create problems, but let's retain what we are having, but we still make an argument that says it is correct as it is. For an example, if we talk about the 26%, we don't have a crisis because we've got 51%. We've got a crisis on the 26%, if we were to follow that logic of argument. Can we then say retain the 26%, because if you go to 51%, we're going to have a crisis? I think it's a discussion that we should have. But I'm saying at this stage, in my view, that there is an agreement that is taken by parties. Looking at this, my question would have been first, is there compliance by parties in this declaration? Secondly, what are the offsets of non-compliance? But thirdly, what happens to me, who decides that? Is it a voluntary process? Who decides not to commit? Because I'll be honest, I said there is a party that is not committed. What is the movement going forward? Is there any other envisaged environment where there can be a strengthening now to make this a viable or periods of assessment by parties? Are we doing well? How far do we go? And what is the cutoff point? Is there a stage where we say now we've been able successfully to block this job loss black bag? I will deal with other issues separately, but I thought, but let me give Honorable Lorima so that she can be able to clarify that part, then I would be able to respond to, because I found it very sensitive to me. Honorable Larima, Honorable Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Deal with them one by one. It's not only a mining crisis in South Africa, self-evidently. But we must not fool ourselves that that's the only reason that we have problems in our mining industry. I think that's the important point to make. And when I see a presentation which seems to, and I appreciate the fact that it's a short presentation, but not to mention the fact that it has become far more difficult to mine in South Africa seems to me to be a problem, because it indicates to me that we might be, you might be, diagnosing the problem incorrectly. If you don't diagnose the problem correctly, your solutions will not be correct. Section 54. Mr. Chair, nobody disputes the success of improved safety in South Africa's mining industry. However, the question is, could we not have arrived at the same point in a different way, a way that would not have been so destructive to the mining industry? I don't think I understand your argument, Mr. Chair, on raising 26% BEE ownership to 51% and saying that we're in a mess already, so why don't we just intensify what we're doing? That seems to me to be madness. Maybe I've misunderstood you. Minister, I want to start by saying how refreshing it is to see a minister in this portfolio committee. It is great to engage with you directly. I hope that you will keep returning. We're not going to be easy on you, so don't expect that. I think mostly you're being too modest. You could tell your department to drop the case on once in part, always in part, and walk away, and that would send a signal. A good signal, a signal the industry needs. That's in your power. You can do that. But when you say, we can't talk about it because it's in the courts, I don't buy it. Similarly, you're being very modest about changes to the MPRDA. You're the political head. You can instruct the department what to do, and I'm sure you can persuade your colleagues in the ANC to commit to a course in Parliament that would change the place where we are, and you could get some movement. I'm very pleased to see some movement, whether or not it's the correct movement, I don't know. I'm very worried about procedural aspects here. But nevertheless, you could do it. You're the minister. You've got clout. Please use it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two issues. One is, if one looks at Intervention 1 of this declaration which was given to us this morning, it's clear that there's, notwithstanding anything in this declaration, compliance to Section 52 of the MPRDA shall be equally applicable, which basically means you need to comply with Section 52. If I recall correctly, and I don't have the act in front of me, if I recall correctly, it said that you need to inform the minister or the department X amount of time in advance. I'm not sure whether it's 6 months or a year, but there's a period in advance. If you intend retrenching or laying off more than 10% of your workforce, there's a particular figures in those section which I can't recall. Now, I'm asking the question because I don't know what the answer is. But if you are enforcing that section to ensure that people were not laid off last year, I mean, sometimes that period, time period runs out, and the mining companies will then revert to Section 189 and the clauses contained in Section 189A saying there's a 60-day period and a 30-day period. Now, I'm just trying to see how you seem to relate to Section 152 and how strong you depend on Section 152 to avoid job losses, which could have come into effect had it not been for Section 152. You follow what I'm saying? Now, the second issue. You refer to page 6 of the presentation. And you refer to 2008 and 2015, I think it was 2014, and you say there was a slight improvement. And now you although you didn't say it, you seem to suggest that there could be a different motive for job losses and the prevention of job losses. That seems to be your core, if I understand it correctly, as to what you're saying. Now, why are mining companies, when we are at a price somewhat higher than 2008, still facing severe job losses? That's a question which I think is the basis of the discussion yesterday. That is, why would mining companies reduce jobs in an instance on your own argument where commodity prices are higher than it was in 2008? That is a question for introspection, which this government must ask. Why is it so that despite commodity prices being higher, are we facing job loss? It could either be and or loss of trust in the GMR, and or loss of trust in the government, and or loss of trust in someone, number one, or and or loss of trust in a regulatory system, and or loss of trust. And that's the nub of the question, in my view, on your own argument, not anyone else's argument, is why are mining companies reducing jobs on your own argument? We say that it is due to regulatory uncertainty. We say that it is because of regulatory tape, red tape. We say because of the price of electricity, because of all those arguments which we've pronounced before. But that's a question which you are there to answer. You follow what I'm saying? Thank you.
Okay, I'm sure you'll answer. If you look at the declaration, intervention number 2, stakeholders acknowledge the need to improve productivity and manage costs to reduce the risk of job losses. They consequently agreed to 1.1, consider all opportunities related to multi-sector productivity, establish cost containment committees within future forums, investigate the possibility of implementing integrated shift system, engage ESCOM and relevant municipalities on the management of electricity supply to minimize disruption of production, and produce a productivity improvement report that identifies practical and implementable recommendations for inclusion into the implementation plan. I'm just dealing with intervention 2. That's why I was asking the question that the committee's task should is to look at the agreement and see, like your last bullet, what could be the possible area that will require reinforcement if it is big. What can as this committee do to assist parties to this agreement to realize their objectives? So the problem is that I would have thought maybe it's another area. If you look on the cover, on the preamble, on its own, it says government, labor, and business organized under the Mining Industry Growth and Development Task Team, convened a mining leadership retreat on 5th August 2015 to address job loss challenges facing the sector and to identify short and medium to long-term interventions. Just that first part, it says to me sitting here, it's a voluntary commitment that parties subjected themselves to. Now, when we invite, obviously, the committee, the department, we have not invited the others, because we never assumed that it's going to be, it's not a court case, to say, okay, do you confirm with your signature this one? Now, I would have thought we were going to start there, because the risk is very high that we'll rehash some of the things that the stakeholders themselves have engaged to, without dealing with them as a committee first.
Now, I hope Minister in the team knows the report. So I don't want us to move away with our own. It's good as a committee to try and bring other ideas. But nowhere did I say, Honorable Lorima, we should then go straight to 51%. I was making an example. I said, if the argument is a projection to 51%, that is the cause. No, you can be excused, Minister, if you understand. I'm sure you are leaving a committed team. If they have not answered other questions, they will follow you before you even finish the other meeting in the cabinet. Now, if then we are dealing with that issue, the point I was raising was that it will have give us a lot of arguments ourselves. Whether that's what you want to start with now, that's another issue. But what I was raising was that the crisis that we are having now is not based on the projection of 51%. It's a crisis that we are having whilst we are still at 26%. So that is the fact. Now, whether the argument would then be increasing, because I assume, and this is what that's why I was very careful, that there seems now as a justification to block the 51% to now appreciate 26%. Not as 26%, I may not agree first with the 26% that is part of the problem. Because I would still go, okay, then it can break us more than I would assume. But the point I was raising was that for each and every argument that we are placing, we should be able to give a justification that it is a current contributor to what you are having. For now, it will be very difficult to convince someone that is 51% the crisis we are having. Maybe it can be justification that we will have the worst crisis at 51%. The worst. Not that we don't have a crisis now. That's my argument. The second thing, I want us to be frank and honest. There is a record in law. There is a record. If a person has been treated unjustifiable in terms of a particular section, then no one doesn't have a record to challenge what is supposed to be done. It's us as a committee here who raised concerns about what is happening in the department in terms of their lack of having more inspectors who are supposed to do their job. It would be very risky for me to stand here and say when somebody is found to be on the wrong, we must deal and mitigate on the sentence given without first asking a question why you became a culprit in the first place. The first thing we should do is to encourage that as we continue to do, and no one should take away the right of any person to trade. But the issue is that if we are going to say now, the rules say if you commit, and this is what we found here, this is what is supposed to be defined, or whatever that it might be, no, we should not then now say you can't do that. Surely people will then have to follow the necessary steps that are required if you feel that you have been treated unfairly. I'm saying this is the backdrop of the fact that we are sitting as a committee from December with fatalities. I think there were three or four in December. In January, with fatalities, I think there were three in January. Before the Lily Mine, there is another one that was reported in February, one. In Lily Mine, it's four. So we should then be able to say, in doing so, don't really have living examples. Let's take the case of Lily Mine. That's why I don't want us to add, because I'm very interested how the department is going to do its own investigation at Lily Mine. But those of us who were there, had that thing happened at the beginning of a shift, would have got a worse disaster than the three. Now, If that company, somebody had gone there and said, by virtue of the conditions that you see here, it is not correct that you must put, you can continue with work until you comply with this thing. Surely because there would have been no incident taking place, then we would have said, you are unfair to deal with this thing. So we can't measure compliance with safety regulations on the basis of what then becomes the consequences of non-compliance. So that's why I said, I don't want to treat this thing as if I'm taking advantage. We should understand also the nature of those people who are conducting those investigations. What are they mean? Are they acting outside the mandate of the department? Because when you employ an inspector, and the inspector comes and do and say, well, this is what I'm supposed to check, and find that there's non-compliance, surely he's supposed to act according to what is written in the book. If I feel I was not supposed, was not supposed to be the case, I would still argue. I must know what is my recourse then, because I'm not satisfied. I can't say traffic officers must not ride tickets because in that 100 kilometer zone I was driving at 120, that was a 20 kilometer difference, until I caused an accident. Only if there is an accident, then I start to make an argument to say why that traffic officer was correct. If I feel he gave me a wrong ticket, or he fined me, or took out the disc and said the car is not supposed to go on the road, I must know what I'm supposed to be doing. Because in the first place, I should not have been on the road with a car that does not have a license disc. I should not be on the road simply because the brakes happened to pull off on my way to Parliament, and then somebody stopped me and said, you don't have the brakes. And say, no, you should not have stopped me, otherwise Parliament was going to suffer and not proceed with this activity. I should ask myself, why didn't I check my car that is worth to be on the road so that it is necessary that I can perform the duties that I'm given? But I'm saying it's a debate that all of us, we must engage to as a committee. Maybe we must consider as a committee how to really enforce the work that is being done here. If it means, again I would say this, it's not going to come from me. If it means let's have a retreat and iron out even our facts on how do you understand this thing, it's okay. Especially it's in the best interest of the country that we must now, as a committee, we feel we must broaden this activity that is taking place of trying to avoid job losses. But is it supposed to be the case? It's another debate that I've always raised, that maybe also the strategy is simple because we're always on a crisis mode. We want to block the job losses. The first question is that how do we make sure that we improve the economy of this country so that we don't have job losses? Job losses must be as a consequence. That is where sometimes I feel we are addressing more of what we see as a crisis. I always make that example. Agriculture, with due respect, Honorable Monday, agriculture is far better. Agriculture, they don't talk about job losses. Don't hear them even now talk about job losses. They talk about the problem that they have, whether it's about drought, and therefore drought is going to make us have an increase on maize and so forth. So you intervene on the basis of what they see to be a problem. It will be on the import parity pricing and so forth, all those related issues, trade-related issues, whether others have got subsidies from their own countries, from their own nation of origin, and they don't have subsidies, they are not subsidized in the South African side. Those are issues that we continuously get engaged with. You then deal with the consequences of job losses as a consequence of not addressing the fundamental issue. But I'm saying again, that should be a change. But you can have your bite before we finish our business with Honorable Lorimer, because I can see he's not satisfied.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members once again. I think it's important for me to highlight this particular issue in terms of the process of saving jobs and the process of making sure that we sustain and grow our mining sector. And I think Minister has also touched is that it's very important that it should always be a collaborative approach. You know, for each and every time that we had winter or the past, the sectors behind has been buried. You know, in 2008, the sector was buried, and now the sector is also very slightly as well. And if you can also look because some people will say, if you look on a 7 year interval, you know, we either have, we the sector goes down or up, and the issue is how do we prepare for that? You can look good, you can go 30 years, 40 years back. The factors may be different. So I think what is important for us, especially as a sector, is maintaining a healthy relationship. And healthy relationship, I'm saying, I'm emphasizing that we will differ always, whether in terms of the legislation, whether in terms of the implementation of legislation, or whether in terms of how the workers are being treated in terms of their safety, or in terms of other areas, you know, in the mining sector, including communities for that matter. But it's for us to say, as the three stakeholders or all the interested partners, how do we respond to it? Now, if you speak to the issue of MIDTEC, when it was established in early 2009, this initial mandate was to save jobs at MIDTEC. It was ready to save jobs. All of us were involved through that process. And there were substantial jobs that had been saved after that recession that took place in 2008. But the mandate was expanded, which is looked at issues of how do we grow the sector? You know, how do we make sure that it's competitive? And I remember, I can recall vividly well, but one of the issues that was raised at that time in terms of how do we grow the sector was the issue of, you know, the way the licensing is taking place at that time. Another issue was the issue of infrastructure that was raised by colleagues at that particular time. Now, government has responded accordingly at that particular time to deal with the issues of licensing, was to be working together with the environmental department, ourselves, and the water affairs department. I think there's been substantial improvement. We came up with a system to try to assist the situation. Yes, there might be some challenges, but we responded, you know. And government also, through the initiative led by our state president, looked at the initiative to improve on infrastructure through the six that took place at that time. And I think there's great work that's been done through Transnet and so forth. So I think it's a collaborative approach that is very, very critical. But we do not, from our side, is that it's very important that we should also appreciate what is happening globally. We will have our own challenges, which we admit to, that now and again they do take place, you know. But we are producing minerals that we are, you know, exporting generally. And hence, the strategies are also being reconsidered, including the issue of beneficiation, industrialization as well. You know, the challenges are there. I think it's for us to say, how do we work together in making sure that we respond effectively, including on the issue of legislation, even on the charter. But we need a healthy relationship among stakeholders, where we'll agree that sometimes we'll agree, sometimes we won't agree. You know, in terms of safety and honorable members and chairperson, it's very important that I must also highlight this important issue. Honorable chairperson, since the beginning of the year up to date, there's been 15 people who lost their lives in the mining sector. You know, and I'm not including the DV mine accident. And if you look at some of these accidents, really, though investigations are being done, one can easily say this accident could have been prevented if the mine or the people who are working in the mine had been proactive themselves. And I'm not trying to blame anyone, you know. If someone could have been proactive and ensure that the mine standards are complied with, we could have prevented it. Now it comes to the issue of Section 54. Yes, it has been a contentious issue that we've all deliberated. But we assure you, honorable members, if, let's say, the law, as we find it, the Mine Health and Safety Act, was not implemented as is, we would have had serious regression. You know? And we are not only implementing the law, but we are also working together with the stakeholders through the summit that we've been holding, coming with the summit commitments and implementing those. I think it has also contributed. But if we don't deal with the regulatory aspect thereof, I think we could have had a situation, a Western situation in the health sector. I'm not even touched the health aspect though. We've been talking about the safety aspect specifically. Now, Minister clearly indicated that he's been having an open door policy. Even ourselves as officials, we are engaging, and I have to assure you, we are engaging with the stakeholders. If they are having challenges, and we always say, as Minister indicated, give us evidence that there has been a problem in terms of implementation of Section 54. And that, for the 2014-15 period, there was only one appeal that we received from the mining sector. You know, but it does not necessarily mean that we don't engage with them. Now, to respond to the questions posed by the Honourable Chairman in terms of whether the declaration is binding, I think we all have agreed that we have to implement that, and hence most of the stakeholders have signed to it, but it's not legally binding. You know? But we can also lose sight that if it was not probably there, you know, we could have probably have lost significant jobs in the mining sector. Yes, there are challenges, Chairperson, in terms of the implementation of this declaration. But if they okay, we've been engaging with the sector on them. And I think the other thing I wanted to emphasize that on all the initiatives and the interventions and the initiatives that support the intervention, they've been based on the challenges that have been identified by all the stakeholders together, including productivity, for that matter. You know, including the problems of electricity that we've been having at that particular in the particular time. So these are responding to those challenges that we have been dealing with, including the alignment of Section 189 process and Section 52 process. But coming to Honourable Schmidt, the issue of Section 52, we have seen that, you know, it's in the spirit of the NPRDA to have what we call the future forum, you know, to deal with this issue before, you know, we get to a point where there's an announcement that so many people might lose their jobs in the sector. I hope I've covered all, but I'm also having my colleagues here, Mr. Mabuza, if there's any other question that we have not covered. I know Honorable Schmidt asked a question on terms of slide 10 of the presentation on the multinational. That I think intervention that speaks to digitalization of the multinational companies, which is also talking to the manager, and it is my target if we also respond to that.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. On employment, Honorable Schmidt, whereas the department has to collect the statistics, until they are released by Statistics South Africa, they are not official. So the latest available employment, official employment statistics, cover a period up to September of 2015. And the data that we have is certainly the latter part of the 480,000 employment as it were. I must say that if you go to that slide with the mining and agriculture and so on, because this is the slide only for quarter three that compares year on year. So if you went to last year and you looked at mining, it was 10%, by far the highest growing on the positive. And if you went to the second quarter of last year, it was also positive. Now, in the third quarter, year to year, it was negative. So, if then the argument stands that the reflection of this graph is a reflection of the MPRDA, then it might be a very good thing. In the first and the second quarter, it was great. It was just unfortunate in the third quarter. But the multinational procurement levy, in the charter as it stands, there is a provision for 1% of revenue generated by multinational suppliers of capital goods to the mining industry to be contributed towards a social trust. It is a provision that is already contained in the charter. So the intention thereof was to look at utilizing some of the available resources where as part of looking at the holistic package of contributing to the stage of the creation of that. Thank you.
I need to wrap up on what then is going to be the way forward. Honorable Norima, I'll give you the last chance and then Honorable Matana.
I'll be very quick, Mr. Chair. Interesting discussion about, first of all, very quickly, the raising of 26 to 51. The problem here is that because mining industry is a long-term financial commitment for investors, they are interested in knowing what is going to be the situation years in the future. The difficulty at the moment with the continual updating of the mining charter is that potentially changes what the conditions will be in the future. So people put their money in, but they don't know. 5 years from now, maybe the mining charter changes again, and the investment is not so good anymore. That's something that we have to consider. Section 54. Two things. One is, if people go by the book, and this is my suggestion, is we have to look at the book and maybe see whether it's the right thing. And I'm going to bring up, for me, which has been the most egregious case I've heard about, and that is the closure of an entire mine for, I can't remember whether it was 24 or 48 hours, because of a non-functioning tail light on the vehicle operating on the surface. Now, maybe that was by the book, but it wasn't smart, not in terms of the production hours lost. And remember, when production hours are lost, it means the mine becomes less viable. It means that maybe the investors' money goes, which means jobs go. So we have to consider that. The second part of that is if inspectors aren't working by the book. And this is a concern, because one hears stories. Nobody's prepared to come out in the open because they know what happens. You say, if you talk against this department, you're going to get punished. That's why people aren't going to say anything publicly. I know that the department will say, no, this doesn't happen. But I've heard too many instances to make me believe that entirely. And that's the whole question of the probity of officials. We know that there's corruption amongst officials. It's difficult to pinpoint. There are too many instances that one hears of that allow me to believe that it doesn't happen. So we have to tighten that as well. Let me leave it there. Thank you.
Honorable Matala.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Honorable Chair. Mine is only one question. It seems like it's an easy one, but very difficult to answer. But I'm not intimidating the team from the department. It is with regard to the research we have done, some of us, Chair, Honorable Chair, relates to mine workers who don't comply with the mining safety regulations. And we're told these mine workers, they do as they wish. Immediately when they enter the safety zone, and there is no monitoring mechanism to monitor the movement of these mine workers. That's why, in our own view, is that that is the reason why some of these mine workers, they simply they don't take their life seriously, as mentioned in that research. So I just want to check with the department, is there any mechanism or steps that can be taken against the mine workers or those who are monitoring the activities to book? Thank you.
Honorable Smith, I thought I should. Let me wait. Let me show you how generous I can be. Is there any other person who wants to make a comment or question? Yeah, the matter is closed now. Okay.
The small issue is that multinational companies' procurement levy. Is it, I would suggest it has to be dealt with in terms of the trust, deed of trust of that particular trust, how the money is saved, so it should be ring fenced. But how much is in there? Is it a tangible amount which could be of assistance? And then just to come back to Section 52, what is the time period and what is the requirement of Section 52? Because I don't think my question was the time period mentioned in Section 52. In terms whereof a mining company must inform the department, so 52 years, inform the department as to if it intends laying off more than 10%. Well, what are those figures and the impact thereof? Thank you.
Okay. Before I would make my suggestion on what could be the way forward, can you answer, Mayor?
Thank you. In terms of the comments raised by Honorable Lorena, we do appreciate, acknowledge the comments that have been made, and we really would like to plead that if there's any information that suggests that any of our officials are involved in corrupt activity, we really would like that to be brought to our attention. Then we deal with that. And if people, they fear the repercussions, there's a hotline, there's also the president's hotline as well. People can, without naming, putting their name, you know, come forward, and we deal with it. And in terms of also the alleged intimidation by us, because I'm an inspector as well, we are saying that he, Minister has indicated he has an open door policy. I have an open door policy as well. I have engaged with CEOs. I had late last year a meeting with all the platinum CEOs to discuss on issues of safety, and we engage, you know, in an open and healthy way. So, but if there's any issue, people, they must feel free. And lastly, also in the terms of if let's say it's true that a mine has been stopped for 2 days because of a headline. And I assure you that there will be other transgressions that has been identified, which are serious. But if there's any other which are questionable, they might urge them to appeal in terms of the law, and also they can engage with the relevant inspectors, including myself. And Honorable Marshall, in terms of the accountability of the mine workers, I think it's one of the things that we've identified, not only of the mine workers. Mine workers, I'm including managers in this case as well, mine management, including the machine operators. At one stage, we've identified that the culture of health and safety in the mining sector and the behavior issues were not where they should have been. And hence, we did a study, about 7 years ago, to see what causes this to happen. And I remember some of the causes or the factors that were clearly highlighted is the bonus structure. It was saying that, you know, bonus is being used as a carrot, but unintendedly so, leads to people to take shortcuts on other ways they don't comply with the mine standards. You know, sometimes people might say the pressure from productivity, and also in some of the instances, some of the managers and the executives were not visible enough on health and safety. We have identified that. Another issue was the issue of diversity management, including the way women in mining are being, you know, the issues of women in mining are being handled in that sector, including racism for that matter. You know, we've identified this as a particular issue. So there are factors that we've identified, and as we came through the Mine Health and Safety Council, working together with the unions as well, we came up with what we call the Culture Transformation Framework to respond to those issues, including on the safety of women. Now, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, although we are not administering that, you know, the mines also can also implement the provisions of that act if, let's say, you know, people are not complying to their mine standards or to their policies, either in terms of health and safety and so forth, including managers. And we have engaged with some of the managers, and they have said, look, this is what the actions have been taken, including in certain instances have to dismiss certain officials because of they do not ensure that the mine standards are being followed. And coming to Honorable Schmidt, I'll give Mr. Mabuza an opportunity to respond to those. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Schmidt, I realize that we did not respond to your concurrent rehabilitation question earlier. The intention here is that certainly where possible, it is not always possible in a mine that you can undertake concurrent rehabilitation. But there are many instances where it is feasible to rehabilitate as you mine along. They are not mutually exclusive, right? Hence the word concurrent. So that while you are continuing to mine, you are then already rehabilitating. And in terms of the law as it stands, the provision that has been made for rehabilitation cannot be accessible until after the mine has been closed. And so what we were looking at is to make it possible for a right holder to access the funds so that they can execute concurrent rehabilitation, where they can present a case study for concurrent rehabilitation. So those are some of the possibilities we were looking at with the stakeholders under this declaration. No, it's in the provision. But we're looking at that. We are exploring that possibility.
Thanks, Chair. And in terms of Section 52, the Act says that if you are making the first part of Section 52 talks about the timeline of 12 months. That is, if you are making those losses of 6%. But the Act again says you must have that future forum where you will talk about these issues about those losses. And the future forum will always be comprised of your management and your employees and your labor. Now, the second part of the threshold of the 10%, on that one, you don't have to wait for 12 months. The only thing it says, if you are going to be people are going to lose jobs in that period, you have to notify the minister. Now, you will notify the minister once you have consulted in your future forum, because remember, you have got a future forum that you have to discuss your productivity and profitability issues. And at that stage, and we have to understand it also in terms of the commitments that are made in every application, because in that commitment, applicants have shown that they will sit down and talk about and come up with early warning strategies and turnaround strategies. Now, if all that fails, they will notify the minister. And that is why, if we look at our the very first intervention, the reason why we said the Section 52 is still applicable is because both of them were trying to complement each other. It's not like they are against, but it's just a matter of time. And that is why we have streamlined this with the stakeholders that have signed to say, as you notify, or if you call, if you go to CCMA and say, or if you notify employees to say, let's consult in terms of 189, you also notify the Minister of Labour. And it makes our life easy because we all come as a collective and say, how best can we save the job?
Okay, thank you, Honourable Member. Thank you, Babu Nseza. Just this note, Honorable Member. One time on my flight to Cape Town, I met this guy who happened coincidentally that he's working in the investor in the mining industry. He raised all the complaints and the concerns of what was happening in the department. And I said, please write to me. I'm going to take that to the department. Up until today, that has never come forth. Because my duty, now the second one, this morning or yesterday, I received again a message. I'm from this area. We joined the union. Now, when we joined the union, management is threatening us. Then said, okay, give me the number of this manager and the name. I'll phone it. The answer came back. No, leave it. We are still going to talk to the lady who recruited us and see what is going to happen. Now, the point I'm coming to is that all of us as members of parliament, the purpose of being here is not just to come and grill people, is to also take up issues and be able. So my appeal is simple. Anything so that we don't, you see, I come from a rural place area. Part of the thing that our people sometimes get blinded, two things, you know, this is I raised with them on the issue of ex-mine workers, but I'll give you a one that may sound like a joke. People will tell you that there is a Sangoma or Inyanga or someone who is a pastor who has risen someone from death. And you then say, okay, where was it? No, I heard it by Sorenso. When you go to Sorenso, no, it's because Sorenso, you can't find anyone who has risen from that. Now, the risk is that if we are going, because we should be careful not to demoralize people when they're doing well. If someone complains, that person must give us evidence, and we have got a duty to make those people account. Now, both sides, for me, not that I'm watering down, Honorable McDrasal and Honorable Lawrence, We should be careful to create an impression that, I don't want to say it's an exceptional, but a rare case that someone who didn't want to wear what do you call it now? It's tricky what? Yeah? Yes. This guy decided not to wear PPE, or this person decided because he's so gullible, wants to work, decided to ignore every rule. It's true, some cases could be like that. That is possible.
But equally, when I was in that way, part of the complaint that we get from workers will be that the very same inspectors, especially in the Department of Labor, are the ones who are being bribed by employers in terms of if you deal with corruption. So it's highly impossible that someone with a mere salary, small salary, can bribe someone who is owning a company. It's always possible. You know, one joke at one time was that in one area, the inspector from the Department of Labor was staying in the flats which were owned by people who were owning farms. And they would be seen every day carrying amasri and meat from the very same person. But they are expected to go and inspect the area. But when you say to people, okay, give us who is this person so that we take it, they'll never come back. So what I'm trying to say, as a committee, we should be careful to discuss issues of speculation that we cannot resolve. My task as a member is that I must be able to ensure the implementation and compliance. We cannot allow a situation where people through corrupt activities will then tarnish the image. It's our duty, as we make them account, we must assist them to also clean up those things that are like that. Don't even wait for, if honorable members, they feel that, no, this one is too hot, bring it to me. We will take it hot as it is and ask them. They must do it. So that even if the instruction comes from the highest, let them give us. And by the time they answer here, we must have action. And that's what today members do. Feel free so that people, so they don't want to say, oh, okay, bring me evidence and so forth. It's our duty. The second thing is that, let's agree, honorable members, this is a huge matter. And I think we shouldn't treat it. But my appeal is that, look, I'm down the line, you see, we've been too much of friends, right? Or we're working very well. We're working very well. But I think at some point there are things we need to cut. We're getting used and to know each other. I sometimes feel sitting on the chair that when there is an item which we all agree without saying, okay, when that item comes, we tend sometimes to move away from what we've asked people to prepare and present to the committee. There is that level, and start to want them to address other issues that they would not necessarily have been prepared to come to the committee for. I'm just saying, as way of managing, so that our meetings, if we say, for instance, because we say it's a briefing on the implementation of the job losses agreement, mitigation. First, we expect them to unpack what is it. Then, how much progress has been made? What do they think are areas that would require to be stressed? That's what we would expect them to do. But sometimes we tend to then go out of what we have asked those people to want now to be too much general. I'm not saying it's wrong. It may help to empower them. But what can empower them well, or can empower them best, is when we say, in what you have put here, these are the things that we think you should have considered factoring in. For instance, if you read on the preamble, it says, that's paragraph 3, we remain, you see, these are committed people. We remain resolute in our principal objective of working towards mining for sustainable development and finding solutions to address the challenges currently facing the mining industry. That's our duty to contribute to this objective. That remains principal. So we have to find a way, honorable members, we're not going to run away from our duty and our responsibility to ensure that we strengthen this agreement. But on that note, let's thank you very much and wish you all the best, and also appreciate the fact that you are still pursuing that incident. Now, I might have been complaining, and by the way, I don't want us also to send a message that we only care about fatalities and we don't care those who would have been injured.
So that 15 is quite shocking. In a period of 2 months, 15. Absolutely. And this is why I was saying the problem with statistics is that it's very difficult to challenge them because they don't tell you the facts. I know by the end of the financial year, you'll be telling us a decrease. But we don't get the incidences when actually these things are taking place. But as I say, we have a duty to make a contribution. I want to suggest this, honorable members. We have seen the presentation, which I think is highly appreciated. We now have the declaration. I'm going to suggest, because next week we've got a joint meeting with agriculture, not rural development and women presidency, on the report, on the joint oversight in Limpopo. Correct, Matan? Another Matan? In Limpopo. Yes. Good. I knew we were going to wake up when I talk about that. Now, we are going to. My view is that, honorable members, once we take this report, we need to agree that we have got a duty. And I think one of the things that are facing us seriously in that is the question of the decline of the industry as the key economic contributor in our GDP. I think that. To me, I prefer rather than to talk about, and not to say job losses, so that our focus should be the one that will take us to the positive side. That to me, which unfortunately consequently leads to job losses. The second one, and we cannot treat that issue, it will require a special attention from us. And I think for now, I'm not satisfied that we've made enough contribution to this exercise. Obviously, the second one is the issues of mine health and safety. I don't know how far it will go with because I was told your amendment bill is still sitting with NEDLAC. And hopefully, we will have an opportunity to also engage with the amendment. But I want to suggest this, that because we are told with rural development and women, we are meeting a term. That as part of our duty, we adopt, we meet at 9 as this committee. That we will meet at 9, we will deal with our minutes, and then matters arising. On the matters arising, I'm now giving you, I can't give you homework, your adult. You must tell me what I'm giving you an assignment. Starting from Nkosi Mandela to Hoshi Matar. Oh, as we've been ripped off with his chieftains. Okay. I didn't know this thing is transferred from one royal to another. Okay. I wonder, honorable members, when we come back to adopt the minutes, let's look at what is the possible way forward. And it must be on the basis of agents. Now, we will get an opportunity to look at the declaration. We will get a report to study the progress that has been made. Let's use that 1 hour in the adoption of the minutes, in the minutes of this meeting of today. Let's use that to say then what should be the way, because we have got different views, and I think we must agree we come from different political backgrounds, but we are seized with an issue that as members of this parliament, because people don't expect us now to go this side and that side, what is it that we think has to be done? To put a halt, but also improve on this current situation, and all of us must put our heads on the table. So that's my assignment I'm giving to you,
all what we'll do on matters arising that week, that next week, on that 1 hour, is what then should be. We're not going to deal with the actual merits and demerits and the let's deal with what do we think should be the way forward and how, what form it should take. Can you agree on that one? A forum where, probably, if we finally agree, we need a forum where there will be a festival of ideas. Let's then suggest, if we suggest that it be in that format, then we will suggest as a way forward in the next meeting. For now, we know the report, and then we are going to finalize on what do we think should be the way forward, including a relevant way where we can handle all the issues that we have in terms of what should be our attitudes as a contribution to this existing agreement. Will that not suffice for us? Any mover? You will remember there was one man, may his soul rest in peace. Proudman, Malzone, one said, Injangele, Jonga Mikheli, Jonga Mikheli, Bonitus of Cross. Now, all of you are looking in my face. No one is saying, I'm asking a question. Is that not the best way to handle and to agree, to note this? Agree in the next meeting on how we are going to tackle this issue, including the form or forum that will capture or deal with the festival of ideas that we have as a contribution to this agreement, but also as a way to deal with the crisis itself in the industry. Honorable Mande.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to support and agree with the a proposal that is put forward to the committee, Chair. Thank you.
I note now, because we are going to elections, I can see the DA they will never agree with you.
It's an interesting proposal, Mr. Chair. I will second it because I'm looking forward to that discussion.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Matala, for doing
okay.
Remember, I would have loved to release you early, but also I know that you received the minutes a little bit late. You can help me. Either we take a 10-minute rest break or we just deal with the minutes now and so that we dispense.
Could we not deal with the minutes quickly next week? Do we have time to read them through properly?
My fear is that the reason I'm pushing for this one, for this meeting, is because sometimes we have meeting minutes. Frankly speaking, I don't think there are contentious issues on these minutes, except if honorable members. Because, by the way, mainly to me, it's about what would have been the decision. Can you quickly dispense with them? Page 1. Are your names all spelled correctly? Page 2.
IA instead of IM. I'd also like to correct that part of Honorable M. Matlalo.
That's wrong.
His name is not Jose. It's
Honorable Matlalo.
Sorry, Honorable Chair. The problem with Madiba is that he's conniving with my younger brother to rid me of my chicken. So this is a serious matter that needs a contract lesser to deal with it. This meeting won't be able to deal with this issue seriously. So, Chair, I will request you not to entertain the issues raised by Madiba with regard to magistrate
because it's conniving my younger brother. This is a very serious matter. I can be killed at any time because I'm told to stay with him here in Cape Town. Thank you.
Okay. Page 2. Hey. Unfortunately, we are not cock. Page 2. Page 3. Seven. I can confirm that on the matter, again, I can say we're not going to be able to adopt the program today. Not again. Okay.
The question is to consider issues which need to be placed on the agenda of the program for the committee. Now, I don't think we've got time to do it now, but please be reminded that we still need to consider that issue, because there's one issue I'd like to place on the agenda, and those are the legal matters against in respect of the mining industry, particularly regarding the mining DMR. get a breakdown as to what exactly is happening out there, in addition to the well-known cases such as Once in Power, Always in Power. There's a myriad of other cases hanging around, which we would like to have, I think, an overview of what's happening. I've got one year, but I think it would be unfair to give the fact now, but it has to do with the Mine Health and Safety Act. An indication as to what's happening out there with the legal issues. So.
Okay, then we'll do it like this. The program, anyway, is we will allow members, because if you look there, we have also identified things that remain outstanding, which require to be set back into the program. I don't think we will avoid honorable members to make a contribution on what are the other issues. But I think the most important thing we will try by all means, where there are similar or issues that necessarily overlap, we may find to try and find a way of how to put them in one way, so that when we give the department, they don't get a conflicted, they say this and then they something similar to that. But I think for now we go up until the first quarter, which is quite impossible anyway to say, because that's what that one is done. But let me just say to members, so that we can have also a clarity of people, when we look at that program, as to how long it's going to be another issue. We look at the break that we're going to have, where now we will meet on the street, each one going past the other, talking to the same person, persuading to look at things the other way around. I'm sure we know all of us, we didn't pretend as if we don't. But besides that, we will then have to look at the fact that, which I think I was going to upgrade honorable members, because you asked that we provide you with that legal opinion, and we can now safely say that we've complied with the request made, but also now the JTM. The process has been successfully unblocked. So when we come back at whatever time, we may be faced with the issue of what will emanate out of the comments or whatever of the MPRDA. So it's already gone through for checking. The matter now is after all those processes might be coming back to the committee. So I'm just saying, in that program, we may have to factor in that issue. I don't know, but we will have a check with the acting DG. I saw something, it was not coming to me, but we can't discuss here until it's coming here. But I suspect we may be forced to have three legislations that we might be confronted with, which is the MPRDA, the bill. Hopefully, if process is in neglect, we go through, we may also be seized with the issue of the Mine Health and Safety Amendment Act, which by the report for now has told us now still with Netflix, ne? Then there is something that I saw in passing. That's why I'm saying when we come back, when we deal with the program, we have to deal with all the certainties, whether also going to be coming there, at what time, your SOMCO bill. So already there were probably three which we have to factor in. We don't know what would be the outcomes of the MPRDA processes, but let's deal with the issue as when we arrive at it. But it could be also another cumbersome one that we would be confronted with. So So I'm saying it would make us more better when we adopt that program. We must also have those at the back of our minds and what is going on. On that note, I think if then we agree, we will deal with the program. We'll have some better and say what time do it, because surely we are not going to deal with it. But the program for this quarter surely is completely off now, if you look on what we have. On that note, honorable members, I don't have announcements. On that note, you were not, don't want this to sound like you were, I might be sitting here and not making judgments. But thank you very much for your efficiency. You can enjoy the rest of your other 30 minutes, 40 minutes that you decided to cut the channel. Thank you very much. See you next week. Next week, honorable members, we are dealing with the joint report. Let me have a chat with you, honorable Warima, for the suggestion to talk to you. But next week, we are dealing with the joint report at 10 o'clock. So we will be in that venue with the secretary is going to communicate. At 9 o'clock, we deal with the minutes. We then deal with the way forward. And then that committee, those two committees will find us there. If they meet either also than us, we will then find an alternative venue just for 1 hour where we will dispose of it. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir.